Following program is presented by True Kids One, broadcasting youth. True Kids One is an educational nonprofit whose mission is to provide New Mexico youth with media skills, tools, and opportunities which open career paths and promote digital citizenship. Find out more at www.truekidsone.org.
The following is a special True Kids One radio presentation of a youth forum we hosted in partnership with the New Mexico Democratic Party Youth Engagement Team. This team works to empower youth from northern New Mexico to engage in the political process.
I think when the 2016 election happened, one of the most annoying phrases I heard was, "Your vote doesn't matter," or "Nobody else is caring as much as you do." And just being able to come onto a Zoom call and have these kinds of conversations totally mitigates that idea. And it's amazing, and I'm really grateful that I was invited and that we're all here and that so many people showed up. It's really inspiring. So I'm very grateful, and I'm very grateful to all of you for being here.
Awesome, guys. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming to this True Kids One New Mexico Democratic Party discussion. It's the first of many. We're going to have many to come about various topics. But for today specifically, I want you guys to contemplate the following question. The challenges we face today and how we address them will define our country for generations. We know that. 2020 is an election year, and it might just be the most significant one yet. Recognizing the crucial role voting has in making change, what do you guys see as the most important issues on the ballot for the coming election? And then from there, I'd like to hear, of course, you know, what do you guys see as the most important issues on November's ballot? And then from there, I want us to break down kind of what those topics are, what they look like, and then kind of wrap in those personal narratives to why they matter to us specifically and why they are so important. So without further ado, does anybody have any answers to that question? Need time to think about it? Harvey, I see your hand.
So in my opinion, the most important issue that's actually on the ballot right now is whether or not America cares about truth anymore. It's not a policy problem. It's a culture problem. I mean, look, I can debate the importance of all sorts of different institutional measures that America desperately needs going forward. And that's why I'm voting blue all the way down, no questions asked. But the pivotal issue for me is whether or not we care about truth, because truth is what we use as the bedrock for making those policy decisions. Everything going forward depends on the discussions we have, and those discussions all rest on what we actually value and whether or not what it is we value is actually accurate.
Harvey, I know that you yourself, you said you worked as a reporter. What did you see in your time at the Santa Fe New Mexican? What did you see in your time there in regards to truth and in New Mexico specifically?
So in New Mexico specifically, there is a mix of whenever I'd ask people about specific issues, primarily political ones, there were two primary mentalities. There was one that was knowledge is power, and then there was also ignorance is bliss. And as 2020 has become a far more tumultuous time, and the past 4 years have been incredibly difficult for all people, the ignorance is bliss has skyrocketed among people, especially among young people. And part of that is, I think, there's so much fear about what's going on right now that people have turned away from what is factually correct because the facts are terrifying, and have moved into echo chambers regardless of the merit of those echoes. The other opinion, and this is something that while it hasn't necessarily increased among people, I have seen those people that hold on to it more steadfast, is the knowledge is power. And that's a message that is being championed among a lot of people. So while I can't necessarily articulate whether or not the facts are in line with that being a more widespread opinion, it is certainly one that is getting more of a voice, and certainly one that is gearing up for this war on truth.
I think that the coronavirus crisis has opened our eyes to so many issues that a lot of us knew were issues already, but now it's like right in our face, like we have to do something about it. So housing, for example, and I keep seeing AOC, for example, it sounds like just vote the Democrats in, we're going to take care of it. Like we're going to pass out the checks. We're going to make it possible for people to stay home. Everybody's going to have health care. We're going to take care of it. And I hope that's true. But I think that the interconnectedness of all of these issues is really becoming very apparent. And, you know, the income disparity, the problem of Bezos and Amazon, like this stuff, it's got to stop, you know? And so I think it's like an overhaul that really needs to happen. And so this time around, I feel like, yeah, there's not a lot of, you just have to vote Democrat. There's not, you just have to, there's not a choice, but I hope going forward, we will have some choices.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like from my perspective, I wasn't super into politics before 2016 election, because this is the first year I've been able to vote. But from my perspective, it seems like the parties have become so polarized. I would like to see in the future, like you said, more choice, less polarization and more collaboration between the parties instead of just an all-out war.
I just want to like piggyback off Madalena and Maya. One of the big issues for me in the upcoming election is just having Native voices heard within New Mexico and nationally, because there are over 500 tribes in the U.S., but you hardly see any of these Native people in positions of power. And just recently, there's just been like with Deb Haaland and with like the Kansas legislature as well. It's like such a huge event when Native people get to be voted into these positions. And I don't think it should be like that coming from a Native person, because Native people have been in this country before it was even a country, before anyone was here since time immemorial. And it's kind of upsetting, especially now with COVID and just seeing all of these disparities come to light to people that haven't really noticed them before, even though they've been brewing under the surface for so long. And that's just something that I've been thinking about.
Our main issue on the ballot is education. And that's because, you know, we have the Yazzie Martinez lawsuit in our favor, and we have all this money going to education. And then me being a parent advocate, going to, you know, PTA meetings and school board meetings, and I'm seeing that money is not making it to where it should go, you know. So that's why it's so important for youth to step up and say, hey, I'm on the cheer team, or I'm on the, you know, Indigenous club, and where's all this money? We need money to hire people to teach us how to use our voices, to teach us about, you know, social justice, or to have enrichment opportunities that, you know, somebody in another zip code has and we don't. So we need to hold our school leaders accountable, because school districts are like million-dollar corporations. You know, they have to be accountable to spend that money. And it's up to our youth to hold their school districts accountable, not just parents, because parents are, you know, they get beat down when they do stand up, especially if you're Indigenous, because it's just the way things are. And so I think it's a time for that to change. And I'm so excited to be able to mentor people and be in a place where we can do that. And you guys have the skills to do that, like all your social media skills and writing skills and, you know, everything that you're learning from your respective colleges. You have the tools to make change like that and be allies with Indigenous people. What I thought of real quick when somebody was saying about housing is we have dreams, something like Bill Gates had a dream to have a computer in every household. Well, Indigenous people have a dream to have their own house. So that's one of the things that, you know, we're working towards, especially in Taos. I know that our Pueblo has a tribal infrastructure request for funds just to have 50 houses. and we have over like 3,000 members. So these are places where your voice can be heard and you can be an ally to our Pueblo and Native communities.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Songtree. Anybody else have any specific issues on the 2020 ballot that touch near and dear to their hearts?
Justice, I think that Cheyenne put something really awesome in the chat if you want to maybe read that out to the group.
Definitely. Cheyenne said that for her, or for them, I should say, the most important issues are probably racial equity and COVID-19. I think racial equity is my most important one, though, because I feel this is the kind of change is long overdue and racism and ignorance has long been normalized. I also feel like discrediting young persons and their beliefs has become a normality, too. And it shouldn't, because young people deserve to have their own views and opinions and shouldn't be silenced. I think that that's definitely a big one. I feel like within the current administration, we see so many people oftentimes becoming silenced or being silenced, whether that's by forced, whether that's by media, in so many different ways, people becoming silenced. And I think that silence is the language of the oppressor. And I think that it's important that we say that, hey, we're tired of speaking that language and it's time for our country to speak and learn a different one. Anybody else?
Yes. So I think fundamental human rights are on the ballot for this election for so many different people and so many different reasons. All of the Black Lives Matter movements that have been happening across the country and indigenous communities and the environment is a life or death situation at this point. But I am here on this panel to advocate for LGBT youth. The Trump administration is actively stripping away healthcare and stripping away rights in the middle of this pandemic. And that's happening for a lot of communities. But I feel like, especially in New Mexico, LGBT youth are often overlooked and ignored, especially in schools and in communities. And I think this election is vital for their future, especially in small towns in New Mexico. So that's why I'm here. And that has less to do with the national election and more to do with local elections. So I think we need to be advocating for LGBT youth right now. And I think it's important to do so in situations like this.
I've actually got a running list of some of the issues that everybody's mentioned over the duration of our discussion so far today. And really wanted to highlight kind of the importance of voting. I think that we all have our issues, right, that are so important to us. Some of them are preference-wise, right? We know what's right and wrong. Some of them are moral. Some of them are so interpersonal to who we are that they almost feel like when these things are stripped away that they're personal attacks on who we are. And in a lot of ways, that's true. And just so that everybody can solidify the importance of this election, because I do kind of feel like right now we are at a crucial point in our lives, right? The lives of our personal lives, the lives of who come after us. Honestly, whether they know it or not, the lives of who came before as well. I think that a lot of people see this election, or some people, I should say, see this election as being another election. But I think it's important for youth especially to know that this is not just some election. This is perhaps the election. LGBTQ plus IA rights, indigenous people's rights, women's rights, which I know Laura actually has a highlight to speak to that at some point today as well. This is the time for us to really to make our votes count.
I'd love to speak on women's rights right now, if that's all right. I'll just say something quick. But today is the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which, if anybody's unaware, the 19th Amendment is what guaranteed women the right to vote. But when I say women, what I actually mean is like white, cis, Christian women, right? Indigenous, Black, POC, LGBT, everybody who's not a cis white Christian woman, they waited a lot longer to vote than we did. But what's important is remembering that we're here for a reason, and there are people who are just like us that have fought for centuries to bring us to the point where we are. And what bothers me about what's happening right now is I think that we're fighting, or there are a lot of people who are fighting to maintain some kind of tradition or conservative idea of tradition. And we're forgetting that tradition is a lot of the same. It's a lot of protesting. It's a lot of fighting. I think it's really important to remember this day as a monument for women, but also to remember that there were a lot of women who were left out. And to remember that when you talk about tradition, it doesn't have to be about the things that are traditionally associated with tradition. And just because you consider yourself progressive or Democrat or whatever you may label yourself as, people have been fighting for what we're fighting for years. Women's rights are just one of those things. And there are tons of things we could talk about in terms of women's rights. We could talk about rights in the workplace. We could talk about the pink tax. We could talk about discriminating women against women in terms of not allowing abortions or not allowing access to birth control. Sometimes it's incredibly difficult for women to even get routine medical care like pap smears and mammograms that can truly affect the long-term outcome of their life, their medical history. So there's a lot we could talk about in terms of women's rights, and I have no doubt that we'll probably dive a little bit further into it. But today is a really big day, and it's an important day to remember that even though this was the day that women were allowed to vote, not every single woman was included.
Given everything that's been said today, why is it important for you to vote specifically? Why does your vote matter? Why is it important for you to vote?
I can go ahead and take a stab at this one. It's a very big question, obviously. And I think if we could get a very eloquent answer to that question to spread to the masses, that would be nice, because we know that many people, tens of millions of people who could vote in this country don't vote. And maybe part of that is because they don't think it's important, but obviously we know there are a lot of other things going on in the background in terms of voter suppression that plays into it. I think to make it more localized, I know I've spoken to Sophia in the past, and she's talked about how truly, especially with young people, it's a good thing to sort of get us to think of politics as a local thing as well, not just as a national thing, right, at the federal level. And I think in a place like Taos, New Mexico, for example, in the town of Taos, there are local elections where people will win with a margin of like 20 votes. People will, you know, a candidate will win and they got like 600 votes for the position that they're running for. And part of that is just because of the size of the town that we're in. It's small. But I think it speaks to the fact that truly, if you're the type of person who buys into the argument, my vote doesn't matter, and it doesn't actually impact anything, I think these simple cases just show like quantitatively, like, yes, your vote does matter in these instances. And I think you could apply that more generally to the national level as well. I think it's not so much that about the individual vote, but it's about what we're doing here, right? Which is bundling and compiling and collectivizing a lot of people with similar interests who support each other, even if they have different things that they're passionate about, like we've heard tonight. And I think that's really where you can pack a punch and make a lot of change. So hopefully that's a good answer. Maybe other people here have something else that they could add to that as well.
I think I would just add that what you're saying about Taos, it does spill over on a national level because of the way the Electoral College works. So Donald Trump lost the popular vote by what, like 3 million votes or something, like a lot of votes. So in some precincts, who their electoral votes came down to like two votes, like individual vote does end up mattering so many places around the country, in small towns. But, you know, also if your county, if you live in Chicago and your county was decided by like five votes, your vote has a lot of impact, no matter who you are.
I'd also add on to that, that just I've met so many people that stay out of politics and don't vote because they don't like the climate. But at the same time, like everyone else, they still have opinions about the world. So one of the most effective ways to make meaningful change, peaceful meaningful change, is through the transition of power that only happens at the ballot box. So if you have concerns about what's going on in the world, if you want it to change, and you have that to vote, then exercise it. If you don't, you're wasting your opportunity. You're complaining about your outside scenario without doing anything to fix it, even though you have the opportunity. And I think that that message needs to be conveyed to more people, that a no vote is just a vote for the status quo. It's a vote for whoever wins the election. It's still impactful. It's still taking a stance, even if you don't realize it.
Harvey, I think that's really important to highlight that that the perceived no stance is still a stance. I think that when you see something that's wrong and you don't speak up about it, that's still a statement, right? When you see oppression happen and you see groups of people having the rights stripped away and you do nothing, that's still a stance. And I think that oftentimes that carries into the votes and specifically the election as well.
I think that's a great point to make. And I'm curious because I've often wondered this myself. So this is another question to our panelists and feel free to answer it or not. But when you're dealing with maybe a friend or a close person in your life who has these ideas and opinions, maybe about political things or things that could be political, but they refuse to vote or take action in politics, what's your method of maybe explaining to them that they're wasting their opportunity or that they could be doing something to better their lives? That's pretty simple, but they're not.
Yeah, actually, I recently, over the past couple of years, I've been trying to have a lot of cousins who are similar age to me, younger than 30, and I've been trying to get them more involved in politics. And I have a cousin who's half Palestinian, half Navajo, which is a hell of a combination in terms of being oppressed as a person. But grew up in Gallup, lives in Albuquerque, and he was very anti-participating in the system. And if I ever broached the topic, he would sort of have one of those stances that was like, I don't really feel like this is a valid system. I don't need to be participating in this. And to Harvey and Justice's point, right, that is a stance in and of itself and actually goes a long way towards perpetuating the status quo. And so for me, I think one of the effective things that actually got him to the point where he wanted to register and go vote is to find a messenger that can bring that message to them effectively. And so for him, it was actually just a video that I found on YouTube one day of Obama speaking to young college journalist students. And he explained some of the stuff that we're talking about here, some of the same statistics, and just having that messenger with the credibility and someone who's eloquent, right? As an eloquent speaker like Obama just explained sort of very briefly in 5 or 6 minutes what your no vote stance actually translates into. And then the flip side, the big machine in the background that's working as hard as it can to make sure that you don't want to vote in the first place or that you can't vote in the first place. And so I think finding that type of content that exists certainly out in the world and sort of tuning that and targeting it to the person, I think is an effective way to sort of get them to change their mind if they're not really willing to listen to you, but maybe there's someone else they admire that they would listen to, even if they're just making the same points.
I like that. Alora, when you asked that question, it sparked actually a pretty recent memory. However, I hadn't thought about it. It was me having a conversation with a friend. And this friend, he's a cisgendered, straight white male who does not recognize privilege or did not prior to this conversation. And I won't go into the details of what led to the conversation. Basically, I was like, man, you have to understand that privilege, or you can get one of your friends of color killed, because what you can get away with, not everybody can get away with type conversation. And he typically, up until, of course, his conversation had been very much of the mindset, like Khaled said, very much of the mindset that I'm not going to vote. It's a corrupt system. I don't like the system, so I don't have to do anything about the system. And the conversation really went in the direction of helping him to understand what, like even at the most rudimentary levels and the most hyper complex levels as well, what that privilege can look like, and that some people cannot afford that. And I guess that ties back a little bit into what I was saying earlier, for myself, feeling like I never had necessarily the opportunity to not be involved, because people of color and minority groups, whether that's based off your sexual orientation, based off where you were born and raised, any number of different minority and ethnic groups don't oftentimes have that privilege. And I think that it's important that when we're having these conversations to try to get people to understand the importance of their vote, that if we are talking to somebody who may or may not have a privilege that other groups do not have, that we help them to recognize that. Because in the context of this individual friend, he didn't understand why his vote mattered until I was able to explain to him what his vote means to somebody like me, and what, conversely, the lack of his vote could mean for somebody like me.
My personal perspective on, like, convincing people to, like, take in their own privilege, I feel like it's about, this is going to be weird, it's about respect and saying, like, people who have other identities than me have valid points as well. So respecting the fact, like me being a cisgender white woman, I respect the fact that I cannot experience some things that other identities do experience. And I have to respect that their perspectives matter and that they're telling the truth. And I cannot, I'm not in the position to validate or invalidate them. I have to just trust that what they're saying is right and work to use my privilege to help them in what they're fighting for.
One thing I want to mention about privilege is, I'm in a bit of an awkward spot when it comes to it. I mean, I immediately present as a cisgender white male. I'm also disabled, and I'm also Jewish. So that has led to all sorts of very colorful conversations that I've walked into that I have had to correct and try and educate people on. And what I have learned throughout my life is that with the privilege that I present with the privilege that I have, it has created, for me at least, a responsibility to use that to be as beneficial and supportive of people without that privilege as I can. It's an opportunity for me to learn as a person and then to present that information to other people that may not be receptive to it should it have come from its original source.
Awesome. Clifford, I know that you yourself identified as an older Democrat. How would you answer that question? How would you go about having that sort of conversation? And likewise, why is your vote important? Why are our votes important? Because I think it's important for those of us who understand the process, understand the system. I think education, advocacy, and discourse is an underrated method of change. And so I'd be curious to get your perspective. Why does my vote matter? And how would you have a conversation with somebody who says that their vote or questions whether or not their vote does matter?
Thanks for the question. I'll try to be brief. I'm a retired public health attorney, so I've always been interested in how the system works. When I do public speaking, I talk about the four ways people can participate in the process of politics. And it's through campaigns, through supporting candidates, through working through nonprofits, and also through being part of what I call the voter apparatus. So I've done all four of those, but I'll focus on the voter apparatus. I've been a third-party voter registration agent since 2006. And so in a neutral, nonpartisan way, I've registered voters. And so I have talked especially to young people at the Santa Fe Community College, where I used to do a lot of voter registration, about registering. And the response often is, I'm sure you've heard this among your peers, and I have a 21 and a 16-year-old, by the way, so I hear it among my daughters, is they're all corrupt, they're all the same, it doesn't matter if I vote or not, I'm just not going to waste my time. So my initial reaction to that, of course, is anger, but I try to control that. And I say, well, thank you very much. You're going to let me make the decisions for you. Thank you for your trust in me, since you are apparently too apathetic or indifferent to do what I consider to be carrying out your minimal responsibility as a member of our country, as a citizen. And I use that word citizen specifically because, of course, you have to be a citizen to vote. It's not being anti-immigrant. So I will decide for you. Thank you very much. I don't know whether that's effective, but that's what comes up to me as a 68-year-old Jewish white male father, public sector lawyer. And so that's what I say. Is that effective? You tell me. I'm really here to listen tonight, which is why I initially logged on without microphone or camera. But since I was invited to participate and I really enjoyed meeting Songtree, thank you for asking me that question.
I guess I hadn't really thought of it like that, not in that context. So you trust me to make decisions for you. And when you put it like that, it really makes me want to turn out to a poll.
So with regard to the whole idea of both parties are the same or all parties are the same, everyone's corrupt, et cetera, et cetera. I think a helpful way of framing it, at least to folks who are politically engaged in other ways, like I know that there are a lot of people who, for example, might be community organizers, but might not necessarily want to vote because of that feeling that both parties are corrupt, neither party has their best interest in mind. I think something that's helpful to me, and my dad actually said this to me during the primary season, he said, basically, think about what you want, like your ideal world to look like. Like what, if you were in office and you were omnipotent, like what would you do and what would you accomplish? And then of the two candidates who, for president, and then also up and down the ballot, of the multiple candidates up and down the ballot, who would be the most malleable to those ideas? And I think framing it that way to me was really helpful in understanding it as like, you're not necessarily voting for the person who is exactly in line with whatever you believe and like whatever ideal world you want to see, but you're voting for the person who's more likely to be shaped in that direction, right? Or like whose policies will help shape that path. And to me, that was really helpful as a framework. I saw another analogy on like Instagram recently, I think, that was basically, it was voting is like public transportation. You take the route that is, it's the quickest route to get to your destination, but oftentimes it requires getting on a bus and then a train and then walking a mile or so. And I think, you know, all of us have experience in New Mexico. We have terrible public transportation there. But I think it is true that it's like, it's not perfect. It's not like you have a parking spot from right where you are and then you get to drive and then go to a parking spot right where your destination is. There's always going to be a little bit of extra work to be done. And I think those two, for me, were kind of helpful frameworks, at least in convincing people to at least vote, and sort of viewing voting as like the bare minimum. Or maybe the first step, I guess.
Voting is obviously incredibly important, but these people who say every politician is corrupt no matter what party they affiliate with, that should be just another reason that we should be more politically active. Because we, as a people, have the ability to check and balance our elected officials. We've seen that with the protests that have been happening over Black Lives Matter. Elected officials have been changing their behavior, and that's just one step we need to take to being more proactive and more holding them to what they've promised us. So thank you for bringing that up. I think that's an incredibly important point.
I go to Emerson College, and Emerson is kind of notorious for being full of artsy anarchists. And what I say to people who say, I'm not voting, the system is corrupt, I don't want to be a part of it, I say, who would you rather resist? Choose the path closest to what you believe, and then resist it and hold it accountable and fight against it. But who would you rather fight against? Who would you rather resist? And that usually clicks into people and they say, oh, yeah, I should vote, because otherwise, what am I doing?
And I think specifically if people are like looking to you for advice in this election, like yesterday, one of my close friends asked me who I should vote for. And I said, well, you're not talking about the presidential election, right? And she said, well, yeah, I am. And I was shocked because it was like, well, Trump's not an option. And she was like, well, maybe I'll do a write-in or a third party or something. And, you know, I think Michelle Obama did a really great job explaining why we all have to vote for Joe Biden. You know, she said he's gonna consult experts. He's gonna get people to help him. You know, like, I mean, a lot of us feminists are really frustrated that he's the one we have to get behind.
I think that an issue that isn't necessarily a policy issue that's on the ballot, kind of similar to what Harvey mentioned at the beginning, but it's still different. I think that empathy is almost something that's on the ballot, right? Because when we look at our choices, especially in the presidential race, I mean, it's, and I guess this is one of my bigger problems. I don't have a problem with people who have more conservative views, like I'm not, you know, against them just because they're conservative, but what I do have a problem with is when people decide that empathy doesn't matter and that caring about other people doesn't matter and that putting themselves in other people's shoes doesn't matter, right? Because that's literally the basis of a society, is we've all agreed to live under, well, I mean, we can make lots of arguments about this, but theoretically, we all live in this society because we do not want mass chaos, and because we do not want children starving, and we do not want people being thrown out of their houses because they lost their job because of a pandemic, and we do not want people being shot by the police in the streets. You know, we don't want these things. We live in a society because we ostensibly care somewhat about the other human beings in our society. And to me, when I look at who's on the ballot, that's what I'm looking to see, is who has the capacity for more empathy and who has empathy for a wider range of people, because that is ultimately, I think, what we lack is empathy and compassion. And it can be really hard for some people who feel very jaded to, you know, it's a very selfish choice not to vote. And making that selfish choice is kind of an extension of that lack of empathy, I would think, in some regards.
Something that I've been challenging myself to do is that when I have that conversation with a friend who maybe is less interested in voting than I am or thinks it's not important, and it goes well, one of my asks, you could say, Kat, is that to ask them to go and have a conversation with another friend who they think isn't interested in voting or doesn't care. And I think there's a part of this conversation about communities and how we get communities to show up and vote. And I think, you know, unfortunately in 2016, the community that everyone talked about was white suburban women and how they voted for Trump. And that was a big reason why he eventually ended up winning. Same with the South Carolina primary. A lot of folks say, you know, Black women showed up and they chose Joe Biden, and we have to trust that Joe Biden is the candidate that's going to lead us forward. And I think, you know, even in this space, we're coming together as a community of younger folks, as New Mexicans. And I think it's really important to not only vote as individuals, but vote as a community, and the impact that that can have and that it has had on past elections.
And speaking of voting as a community and making sure that we're spreading this awareness as far as possible, I'm sure everyone here is registered, but make sure you're sharing registration materials as much as possible. I registered months ago in Austin and I just got my card. So the voter suppression is real, it's happening. The earlier you can get people to register, the more likely they are that they're gonna get their card and they're gonna go out and vote. I mean, even if you're on Instagram or Facebook, there are resources that you can share via posts, via stories, via Messenger, where you can show people how to get registered online really easily. And it's such an important first step to making sure people show up on election day.
I agree with Alora. That's one of my kind of barriers as an organizer, is I do speak to my friends that are not registered voters, and I do convince them to register to vote, but then I'm on call all day or scheduling things or checking email. So I literally don't have the time to spend like 5 minutes with them to register them to vote. So that's why we have such a huge need for volunteers. So even if you volunteer 1 or 2 hours, that's like potentially 10 to 20 voters that you could be registering to vote, and you can create your own virtual voter registration drives, which is what Navalyn and I are gonna have coming up within the next week or two. And so we totally invite you to join any one of our organizers in New Mexico. After this, tonight, after I get off, I have to call one of my friends, and literally when you go to vote.org, it says this will take 2 minutes. It's just so hard to like do that. So volunteers are so important in this election. So thank you.
We are going to be creating infographics and sharing information and stuff on our Instagram. It's at DPNM Youth. Eleanor, you want to wave to everyone? Eleanor is going to be creating some of the content, actually probably most of the content for the Instagram, which we're really excited about. But we have a couple infographics up there already. If you want to share those with friends and family, feel free to. And then also nmvote.org. It's super simple. It's like literally just type in nmvote.org into your browser. It's such a good resource. It links you directly to the Secretary of State's website. You can check your voter registration, check your address, register to vote. I think starting September 1st, you can actually request an absentee ballot. You can find your polling places there. Like, everything is on nmvote.org. So if anyone has questions that you don't have the answer to, I would direct them to nmvote.org as well.
If you do it online, though, you need a New Mexico driver's license number if you're registering to vote, unlike if you do it with a voter registration agent. So there's one extra hoop that needs to be jumped through to register to vote or re-register online, but it's doable.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for participating as panelists today. The work, of course, is not done. It is imperative that these discussions continue to be had, especially amongst young people. We shouldn't have disenfranchised voters. And so it is up to us, it is up to young people especially. Have a conversation with your friend, have a conversation with your partner, have a conversation with your family, because honestly, we the people is what this country was founded off of. And it is an expectation that this country has never lived up to. But I believe that if we all can show up to an election, if we all recognize that our voices matter, we can actually make positive change, and we can make that we the people of reality for more than just a specific group of people. And I believe that we can do it. I'm a strong proponent of the mindset that the most wide sweeping change starts with a conversation, starts with discourse. And that's exactly what we are doing here. We can change our state, we can change our country, and we can make that motto of we the people reality for all.
This has been a presentation of True Kids One. We would like to thank our partners at the New Mexico Democratic Party Youth Engagement Team, who are working to inspire young people from across New Mexico to be more politically engaged. For more information about DPNM Youth, contact Sophia at 505-216-6745. Thank you for listening to True Kids One. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at True Kids One.